Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Joan Ocean. She has many areas of interest in which she carries out quite a lot of research, which includes dolphins, whales, ETs, Sasquatch, and also an interest in time travel. And this coming year, she is in fact convening a symposium about dolphins and teleportation, which she would also like to talk about. So I'm sure we're in for a very interesting chat here. So welcome to the program, Joan.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mike, for having me on. You know, we really appreciate you here in Hawaii. People read your information that you bring through, and it's very inspiring and supportive for all of us.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Perhaps you would like to interview me.
Yes, that would be good. You're coming this way?
Oh, that would be a long trip, wouldn't it? It'd be a lovely one, though, I must admit. Now, out of all these subjects that you have an interest in, which is your favourite one?
Well, you know, I'm mostly known as my work with the dolphins. That's the one that's been out there the most. But, of course, the whales are extremely powerful, and I enjoy being with them and swimming among them. Right now, I'm very involved in the teleportation and time travel information. So the Sasquatch are always dear to my heart. I just received I get so many emails from people appreciating that I had that information on my website because they have had contact as well and had no one to talk to. So I really like it all. I mean, for me, most people think of me as connected with the dolphins.
Right. So when you've mentioned about swimming with the dolphins and the whales, I gather that they are extremely, have a high level of consciousness. Do you find you can connect with them?
Yes, my work is mainly about communicating with them. I really like to understand their sounds and their sonar and then the acoustic images that they send to swimmers in the water in particular and to translate it. You know, my background, my degrees are in psychology, and so that's always been really helpful in communicating with animals in general because of the empathy. You use a lot of empathy. And the dolphins have even coined the term telepathy as a way of communicating with them. In other words, it comes from the heart. You know, it has that energy of love with it whenever you're communicating and when they communicate with us. So I have been swimming with them here in Hawaii for about 23 years now, the same dolphins, you know.
All right, yeah, I never realized that they had a long life. How long do they normally live for?
Well, I will say around 70 years in the wild, that is, not in captivity. Many people don't know for sure. We don't know for sure, but I have research, and then I have the previous researchers, their pictures and their information, that at least shows me 50 years. And because of the dolphins being so similar to humans in their body, in their birthing, in their way of interacting with each other and giving breathing and things such as that, I think their lifespan is similar to human lifespans as well. The whales, of course, they live much longer. So they've been able to find an old arrowhead in a whale, a spearhead that was used long, long ago, and they could carbon date it, and they found it in the carcass of a whale along the west coast, and they were able to date it to over 200 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. What message is it that the dolphins have for us?
Well, you know, I think a big part of it is they teach by example. Every place I go, people are so interested in dolphins. I don't dare bring up the subject on an airplane or I'll be talking for the entire flight to the person sitting next to me. Everyone seems to love them, and I think it's because they really are joyful and they really are, they live a simple life and they're very cooperative, interacting with each other, and yet very intelligent. They are, in my understanding of them, multidimensional, in that they can shapeshift, and I've had that experience with them when I'm swimming with them for many, many hours at a time. They seem to be aware of past and future events and can communicate that. And I think that's really where my interest grew about teleportation and time travel, is because of the experiences I've had. I've had 25,000 hours in the water with dolphins over all the years. And when you're swimming side by side with them like that and just having eye contact, you learn a lot of what they're communicating. So people love to be with them. You know, they're playful, they're safe, they're funny. We play games in the water. They bring us leaves they find in the water. They bring us pieces of plastic. They carry it on their dorsal fin or on their tail, and then they shake it off and let us catch it, and we dive down. So we do a lot of playing together in the water.
Yes.
And it seems the information that they're transmitting comes to us during times of play like that.
Yes. I would think after that many hours with them, you're probably developing your own fins, aren't you?
I think so. Yeah, my feet are changing shape. I noticed that.
Right.
Yeah, I do feel more a dolphin than a person a lot of the times.
Yeah. Oh, well. Now, what I find wonderful about the dolphins is the occasions when they've saved people at sea from drowning, that they've come from underneath them and supported them until they could reach safety. I would imagine you've heard many examples of that type of happening.
Yes, yes, it's wonderful. People are always sending me stories whenever they read something new about that, and that's really well known. And then in my personal experiences here, well, I've worked with an organization called Make-A-Wish Foundation, and they bring children who are terminally ill, and they're granting those children's dying wish. And many of the children are asking now to swim with dolphins. And,
yes.
You know, they don't want to go to the captive ones anymore. They're smart enough. The young people, they want to be with these sweet, free-swimming dolphins.
Yes.
And so I have seen the dolphins really help these children a lot, and the parents of the children, too, and the caretakers. So major changes occur. I mean, some of the children literally do not die after that, after they have been in the water with the dolphins. These are children with autism and leukemia, cancer, multiple sclerosis, brain tumors, things such as that, paralysis, bipolar disorders, and childhood traumas. So it's very rewarding to experience that, to just know, to be in the water with them is very life-changing.
Yes, I have read many stories of young children being really at home with dolphins and experiencing healing. I think that's absolutely wonderful. I don't know whether you go along with the idea that with the end of this cycle, at the end of 2012, that there will be some sort of upliftment, which people refer to as ascension. But if that is the case, I wondered what place the dolphins have in the future. How will they still connect with us?
Yes, well, they don't really dwell on that a lot. It's interesting because a lot of people ask me questions, what do the dolphins say about 2012? But one thing you learn when you spend a lot of time with them is they pretty much accept on a daily basis whatever comes into their lives. And they're very accepting and allowing. So they're joyful in the moment and living in the moment, and really not, they don't have the kind of worries we have or concerns. So I see them still being with us, still being in the oceans, still inspiring us and doing their healing work even, and invigorating people the way they do. Of course, we're a little concerned about the pollution in the ocean and the pollution of sounds. Also, so that's something that we as humans have to take care of and fix as best we can for their sake. That's up to us.
Yes.
But I think they'll still be here with us and still be experiencing. To me, the entire planet, all of Gaia, is ascending, is evolving, and everything on Gaia, everything in Gaia. So all the animals and also the people and the dolphins and the whales will all be moving into higher consciousness together.
Yes, indeed. I tend to believe much the same. Do you think that the emanations from HARP, as they call it, which I believe they send through the seas, do you think that has a lot to do with some of the beaching that's been experienced where pods of dolphins have died?
Yes, I definitely think that. In fact, we have found proof that it's true in the Bahamas, in particular, where a beaked whale came up on shore and just happened to be the place where a researcher was there on vacation. He was able to take the body, it was dead, to a laboratory and immediately do a necropsy on it, and found indeed that the vessels in the brain, the blood vessels, had burst open, and that was what caused this small whale's death, this beaked whale. Mm-hmm. And in investigating further, they found that the Navy was there, the U.S. Navy, putting out its LFAS, low-frequency active sonar,
yes,
in the water. So right. Since then, they've been able to find more proof of that. I was involved in a lawsuit against the Navy to protect the whales and dolphins. We were successful in the lower courts. The judge always ruled in our favor and told the Navy they would have to cease and desist and prepare a new environmental impact statement. Mm. But then the Navy took it into the Supreme Court, and there they were given a right to use their sounds as much and as often wherever they would like to, with the words that national security is more important than natural resources, meaning the whales.
Yes.
So how did that work? You know, you wonder sometimes spiritually, well, why did it come out like that? Why didn't we win the case, kind of a thing, you know? And I had to observe what happened after that, and what happened, people were just very, very upset by that ruling and that decision.
Yes.
So many more people became aware of the plight of the whales and dolphins in the ocean and of that particular type sonar that is so detrimental. Interestingly, they're using it now for crowd control. They
really?
Have land type of sound that causes people's eardrums to burst or damages them so badly to make crowds disperse. So, you know, these are the kind of things that I truly believe the dolphins and whales are helping us to become aware of, to show us, look, if you don't protect the oceans, you're not going to survive on this planet, because 51% of our oxygen comes from the oceans, from the plankton there.
Yes.
So,
yes,
again, that old saying that the dolphins and whales are dying to save us, I hope it's not true, but it rings in my ears sometimes, thinking of that, because they are willing to do whatever it takes to wake us up, it seems to me.
Yes, that's awful, isn't it, to think of that? And when governments refer to national security, I must say, I often wonder, since we've been in some sort of continual state of war for about the last 100 years or more, why is it we never hear of governments talking of trying to broker peace? That they're always pursuing the idea of becoming more powerful, more devastating and lethal weapons. There's something very wrong, isn't there?
Yes, it's true. And I think, you know, as we know, of course, war is very profitable. And I don't think anyone in those realms, in that part of the government, I don't want to say anything negative about entire organizations, but certain people there that have the power are not interested in peace. Really, it's not what they want at all. So, and it's a very interesting thought, because I've put a lot of thought into that, and it seems that somehow there is a belief or an idea that the more technology you develop, the more advanced you are you know, keep making more incredible technology. But actually, I don't agree with that. I think that where we need to go is with consciousness. And the more evolved we become and realize that we are like a single planetary organism, then that is when we will advance. So I think that's what so many of us are working on, you know, creating that oneness, creating that higher consciousness among all people. And I do think it's happening. I feel very positive about it.
Yes, I totally agree with you on that. Now, just one other aspect connected with dolphins and your coming symposium. What is it you would like to tell us about teleportation?
Right. Well, it's very interesting because most people thinking of teleportation, first of all, they think it's science fiction or, you know, something from Star Trek or something like that, which was a very good introduction to it. But yes, it has been possible. People have been teleported since the 1940s, from what my research has shown. And I am interested in it not as a technology, although that has been achieved. But again, I like to work with natural energies. The dolphins have shown me this. The Sasquatch have shown me this, that we can do these things ourselves. If we can go into a place where there's a vortex, be in a space of loving energy, perhaps the group energy of a meditative circle, use natural energies that exist on the planet, the sun, and certainly the water, as ways to teleport and time travel. And that's my main interest. But it's kind of fun. I like to read up everything, you know, like Michio Kaku, who I really admire and appreciate, and other scientists, Dr. Ron Mallette, who has been working, he's a physicist from University of Connecticut, who's been developing time travel equipment, machinery, and Dr. David Lewis Anderson, too, who has his own organization for that, his own laboratory, and they have developed it now. I like to read what they write because a lot of what they're doing, they have to interact with great forces in the universe, great fields of energy, all the quantum states and the holographic matrix that overlooks planet Earth. So as you read what they're saying, as I think you probably know, you realize that physics and metaphysics are coming together and understanding things alike, even though they're approaching it from different directions. So I became very excited because I made contact with a wonderful man named Andy Bisaggio, and he's actually presently an attorney in the state of Washington, but he's a time traveler. He traveled, he was with the Department of Defense, and he began as a child when he was only 6-7 years old. They started with about 25 children, American children, and began putting them through the time travel portals, to see how they would do. The children seemed better subjects than adults. And in his case, he went with his father. His father was in the military. They would hold hands, go together, jump in through the jump gate, and then in only a matter of seconds, they could go from, for an example, New Jersey all the way over to New Mexico in such short time. And they did it repeatedly over and over again. So he has come forward now to talk about his work with DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Program Agency, and he continued to be involved in it when he was 19 years old. Then they time traveled him to Mars, and yes, he has all the information about it. He has the names of the people involved. He has the background, the details. It is fascinating what he saw there, what he experienced there, what it was like, all the details. So when I heard him speaking, I became very interested in knowing more. And again, because I feel the dolphins have done that with me in the water, and I can tell you more about that, and also the Sasquatch. And so I wanted to hear everything he had to say. And I finally decided the best way to do that was to invite him to come here to Hawaii so I can really have a lot of time to talk with him. And then through him, I learned of, you know, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower. She was asked, she's of the President Eisenhower bloodline, and these powers that be sometimes seem to focus on bloodlines to have good, healthy people going to these new colonies. So she was asked to join a colony on Mars to go there to live. And there was quite a bit of pressure put on her to go. And, of course, they made it sound very exciting and fascinating, but I think the bottom line is, for someone like her, once you go there, you don't come back. So she thought about it and said no. You know, she loves the Earth. She loves planet Earth. She feels her work is here to help the Earth and not to leave it or desert it. And so she chose not to go. But her experiences are fascinating to hear. And then the other person I also invited, Alfred Lambremont Weber, who is the originator of exopolitics and is aware of Martians on Earth, which is a whole other field that's corroborated by a number of different researchers. He can speak eloquently of universal connections between our planet and other planets. He's a very much a universalist. So it was interesting that when Andy was a little boy, they were able at that time to go into the past and to go into the future. So at one time, his father and other military people succeeded at going into the future, and they brought back with them a book, the book written by Alfred Weber, a book called Exopolitics.
Yes.
And they were reading it, and this was in the year, I think it was in 1971. They brought back this book that was written in 2005. And they were looking at it because they were interested to see how far had these had our population on Earth evolved by 2005. What was this book saying about our contact with extraterrestrials and about life on Mars? And they looked at that, and they saw that the book was dedicated to a president that was a future president, and they had to look up to see who that was. So it's a very interesting story. And when Andrew Bisaggio decided to come forward and be a whistleblower about what he knows, he looked up Alfred Weber to tell him, did Alfred know that they were looking at his book as a way to understand the years 2005. And they became good friends talking about that. So now they work together, and the three of them are the keynote speakers coming to speak about this and reveal. Donald Rumsfeld was involved, and other politicians, some of whom are still around now.
Yes.
So I just got fascinated by it, and I'm very pleased they're coming here, and we're having a lot of sign-ups for it. So
yes,
that's my passion right now.
Right. Yes, wonderful. And believe it or not, I actually had Andrew on one of my programs not too long back, so I can equate with everything you said. And one of the most fascinating stories I liked was when he used this type of wormhole or tunnel that he went through and went back into the past that I think I've got this correct, the address that Abraham Lincoln made when he went back as a drummer boy. Did he tell you that story?
Yes.
I thought that was fascinating.
True. Yes, he said he always admired Abraham Lincoln, and he thinks that's even why he's an attorney to this day, because that's what Abraham Lincoln was as well. And yes, he was able to go back into the past, and I guess he went a couple of times, and you know, just to experience him in real life. Although it doesn't always work out as easy as you think to try to find the exact moment to be there at the correct time. Of course, it can only be done with all the computers we have now. But he did go back,
Indeed.
Yeah, very fascinating.
And also equally interesting was when he went into the future, beyond 2012, and he met people who knew about him then and his work.
Which is
not surprising. Yes, it's a terrifically fascinating subject. But isn't it a pity that more people aren't aware of the experiences of people like Andrew? I mean, and the information he gave about the bases and what goes on Mars is quite incredible. Yet I would imagine very few people would believe that there have already been bases on Mars for many years.
Yes, I know. I have to say I was really aware of the reaction, you know, and I would put that out because, you know, I've worked with dolphins for so long, and yet I like change. I like to learn new things all the time. But people like me to stay kind of in that dolphin role a bit. So when I put this out, I can see now, even on the internet, you know, people doubting, they don't believe teleportation's possible. And that's all right. I like that. I invite that because I love to have discussions on the subject. And this whole thing has just brought me into, I felt I received the idea, the suggestion to have this symposium from a group that I'm in contact with, known as the Arcturians.
Oh, and yes.
It was a suggestion they made. And, you know, when they make suggestions, I'm sure you can relate to this, it's like they already know you so well. They know what you would like to do and what you'd be good at, kind of a thing. And so when you get that idea, it just fills your heart. You know, you're just so excited. You just say yes, a big yes immediately. So, I started doing a lot of research about it, and I've always been interested in science and physics, although in this lifetime I did not get degrees in physics. But as I said, I really believe it's coming together with metaphysics. And someone I've read everything he writes is, you know, Michio Kaku. Of course, he's so wonderful because he can put it in layman's terms, these concepts, and he's excellent at that and helps so many people. But it was interesting that in his I think it was his last book called Physics of the Impossible, he kind of said in there that teleportation of people was not possible. And I was disappointed. I thought, well, you know, it's really been going on for a while, but things like that can be done secretively. And then even in 2008, when he was writing about it, he said, no, it would take centuries before any objects could be teleported. But I was so pleased to see just yesterday I was looking, and there was a YouTube. He was speaking on a YouTube film, and it was done in March of this year, where he said, yes, we have confirmed that teleportation of large objects, as he calls it, is possible now.
Yes.
So the subject is really up, it seems. You know, people are opening to it. There's a fellow named Joseph Skipper who has an amazing website, again, using a lot of pictures of NASA's photos and Jet Propulsion Lab photos. And he has researched them, he has analyzed them, he has taken years of his life to understand these photos and has determined and has shown that there are facilities, there are structures on the surface of Mars that are not natural. In other words, there are man-made structures there. So his work is very fascinating, too. And then there's a fellow, Michael Ralph. Ralph, R-E-L-F-E. Did you hear of him?
Yes.
He was in the military service, and they sent him to Mars for 20 years. And he was there, and then he came back. And what they're able to do is they can age regress you or just change the timeline. So although he left in the 70s and came back in the 90s, when he came back, he stepped right into his life he had had before he left. And some of his memories, many of his memories were removed, but he found a therapist because he was troubled by something. He felt a lot of anger, and she assisted him in getting in touch with the reality of what had happened to him over a 20-year period on Mars. So all of her manuscripts, she has written at least four now, with detailed explanation of everything on Mars, who's there, what he experienced. And it's fascinating to read. And I don't think he's alone. You know, I think he's one of many, but he's come forward to tell the truth about it. So,
yes. It's interesting that we've got onto this subject because, believe it or not, in the last week I was looking through some of my old documents that I kept back. And I had a file, this is on my computer, of course, which was a video of a documentary that was on British television in 1975. And it was about family or friends of people in the States who suddenly disappeared. And the theme throughout these disappearances was that they suddenly mysteriously went off on a special job of which they would not give any details whatsoever. And when they were tracked down, bar one exception, they all disappeared from the time they left from New York on the planes to go wherever they were due to go. And I couldn't help thinking that was the time in Great Britain that they called it the brain drain, because so many scientists and people like that were sort of disappearing out of the country. And I couldn't help thinking that possibly where some of those people ended up was on Mars, because they never heard another word about them, no contact or anything. And I thought quite a coincidence that I sort of come across this old documentary again and now speaking to you about it. Yes,
that's
quite strange.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think it was called Alternative 3.
You've got
I
it.
Have
that was
a copy.
It. Yes.
I have a copy of it.
Did you? Oh, well, isn't that amazing? Gosh.
You
and
I
are on the
really
same line.
It's really fascinating. I mean, yeah, the brain drain and you know, the... And, you know, that was, I guess, based around the idea that there was a big meeting that took place among government people, the higher-ups, the people making decisions for the nations of the world, and they were seriously aware, considering what to do about Earth changes, and that they felt certain cataclysms were going to happen on Earth, and that they had to come up with a solution, at least for some people, to save some people, so that the human race would continue, even if there were terrible cataclysms, be it sun flares or yeah. high winds or storms or earthquakes or shifting of the poles. They looked at all that. It was quite an incredible gathering, and they actually have a report on that I have also. But they finally decided, they made three alternatives, alternative 1, 2, and 3, what to do in case of that emergency. And alternative 3 was the one that they should transport people off planet Earth so they'd be safe, so that the human race could continue elsewhere.
Yes.
And that was the plan, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy to have Laura Magdalene Eisenhower on my symposium, because she has come up with alternative 4, and right. I totally agree with her alternative 4, which she, coming from a place of higher consciousness, understands that what our role should be and could better be would be to stay on the Earth, work with the Earth with higher consciousness, and instead of putting billions and trillions of dollars into a base on some other planet, to take that money and use it to assist the Earth, help the Earth, educate people, and help people come together in peace to create this beautiful reality on Earth. And
Absolutely.
She expresses it so eloquently, much better than I do. I love listening to her. She is an inspirational speaker.
Yeah, I think alternative 4 is the answer. Joan, but yeah. What I'd like to do now, because I think you have some interesting comment here, is to tell us what you know about the Sasquatch.
Oh, sure. I just love them. It was very interesting. I mean, I did not believe in Sasquatch, Bigfoot, you know. I didn't think they existed. I didn't think people were lying. I just thought maybe there was one, like, ape running around and people were spotting it here and there in the woods. So I hadn't given it much thought. And then when I convened a conference in 2005 called Dolphin and ET Civilizations, I always like to have one kind of wild card speaker, you know, somebody different.
Yes.
And so I invited a man who said he was communicating with Sasquatch, and he had written a wonderful book called The Psychic Sasquatch and Their UFO Connection. So I invited him. He was happy to come. And when he talked about his personal experiences, I was so touched by that. You know how you get that feeling in your heart? You know it's the truth. So we ended up going together to a location where they were. And I personally had contact with a Sasquatch, one in particular, who I was in a little cabin. No one else was around. I was all alone. I was kind of dozing off. It was around 5:30 in the afternoon, evening, and the door of the cabin was open. So it was kind of dusk, a little bit getting dark, and all of a sudden this big hairy being leaned down and looked into the door. And I was just laying there looking. I didn't get frightened because I looked at the eyes, and they were so loving. I just felt this light shining from these two eyes. I could tell it was non-threatening, that the Sasquatch was trying so carefully not to scare me or upset me, but wanted to have contact. And we just looked at each other and looked at each other. And then eventually I found out it was a she later, she stood up and just walked quietly off. And and that was it. You know, it was very much like the dolphins. Once you have eye contact and you feel the love, you just want to know more. So I continued to go to that location, which I keep secret because some people are trying to, you know, locate them and shoot one just to prove they exist. I know they exist. It turns out that she was one of a family of 33 of them, and they were living in this particular part in this forest where I was. And she is like a medicine woman. She's kind of their spiritual leader of the family. And there's, you know, the mother, the father. She has a brother who's six, and we were able to communicate and learn many things from each other. The Sasquatch, this particular one, if you look on my website, you'll see there, she had a great-grandmother who had contact with missionaries and had taught her to print letters. And they can. They are humans. They're not apes at all. They look like us. I have an amazing picture of them. You know, you see their face, lips just like ours, nose like ours, eyes, the thing, and their eyes, it's usually all, the eyeball takes up the whole eye. It's a black eye with a light shining out of it.
Right.
And she was able to, print and write notes, which people find very hard to believe, but it's all on my website, copies of her notes, just simple little words, little answers and things, so I could ask her questions and receive information back. They also were taking me to what they called the Sometime Place. So the Sometime Place is, to me, it was like time traveling. I would get together with this one particular female Sasquatch, and we would stand together, and then this swirling energy would come up, and we'd both be immersed in it, a spiral. And then after a while, we would appear in another location together. Mm-hmm. And, well, as you can imagine, that was so fascinating to me.
Yes.
I asked the family if I could bring people to meet them. And I realize this is a difficult situation because on one hand, you want them to be protected and safe, but on the other side of it, you don't want people coming and trying to shoot them, you know, and kill them or capture them to put them in a zoo or something.
Yeah.
So I asked them if I could, and it was like they sat in council, and this is at night, in the dark, in the woods. You cannot see a thing. I'm sitting out there. I start with a fire, but then the fire burns down low because they prefer to come when it's dark because I guess they're used to humans get frightened of them, so they don't want to frighten anyone. And I said, would it be all right if I bring some people to meet you? Because that's what I do. I bring people to meet dolphins. I bring people to meet whales. I meet in circle and bring people to meet extraterrestrial star people. I would like to bring people to you. And they didn't give me an answer right away. This was certainly something they had to talk over. But when I told them I bring people to see the dolphins, I received an answer back telepathically, and they said, yes, but the dolphins are loved by your civilization, your people. They are joyful and funny, and they're in the ocean, and people see them on television, kind of a thing. And, yes. And so it's not the same as bringing people to see us. People might be afraid. So then I said, well, that's true. And then I said, I know, well, you know, I bring people to meet the humpback whales. Now, the humpback whales are like 45 feet long, big barnacles all over their body, bumps and big mouths and huge tail. I said, they could be very frightening for people, but they're also gentle, very gentle. And so I sent them the picture. I sent the Sasquatch the picture of a group, small group of people swimming alongside humpback whales. So they seemed to like that idea. I got the feeling they went, uh-huh. You know? Yeah. And so ultimately they gave me permission to bring people to meet them. And so I've been doing that now for the past 6 years, just bringing 4 or 5 people at a time to the location where they are. Everyone has had contact, and it's different every time. You know, it's like they can tune into the people that come and see how ready they are in a way, you know, how far they can go. So I go there regularly to be with them. Sometimes we see balls of light, which it's a little different than orbs. You know, we see orbs sometimes, but they will have orbs, balls of light, which are solid lights that do not reflect on the ground or anything, but they're very bright, and they will move around us. And the feeling is that is the spirit of the Sasquatch coming sometimes. They might start with that and see if people are comfortable with something like that happening nearby them, you know, in the dark woods.
Yeah, so, that's absolutely interesting. How do the Sasquatch relate to the star people?
Well, they do have a relationship to them, and that's been another wonderful part of meeting with them in the woods. We often see extraterrestrial ships in the sky, and I've been able to get some good pictures of that as well. And they told me, the Sasquatch, who actually call themselves the Ancient Ones, I should be clear about that. You know, this group that I met of 33, I don't necessarily think this is your average Bigfoot. I understand people would say, I never heard of any that act like that, because this is not the same as there's different ones, there's different types, and some of them are more conscious and their brains have not been tampered with, or they've evolved. They said they arrived here at the time of the last ice age. They were here then. They lived through the last ice age 12,000 years ago. So this particular group I'm in contact with, they refer to themselves as the Ancient Ones. I use the word Sasquatch because people are familiar with that, but they say the Ancient Ones. And they say, yes, that they do travel on the ships, that they are friends with the star people. They worried me one time because they said something about bad star people. And I said, oh, I've never had contact with any bad star people. Is that something I have to worry about when I'm out here in the woods at night, you know?
Yes.
And then the answer from the Ancient Ones was, no, you are protected. Oh. So they have an incredible level of awareness. They're aware of the Mayan background, the Olmecs, different civilizations that actually migrated up into the United States, weren't only in Mexico. The mounds that they built, their reverence for the solstice and the equinox, and using those powerful energies as a way to go into the sometime place or to time travel. They are always very aware of our presence. When I will say to them telepathically, I wish you would come, I want to see you, I always get the answer back, we are here.
Right.
So they are always there, you know, just like the wonderful beings you're in touch with and the other beings I'm in touch with, they are aware of us in every moment, you know, and just we are just starting maybe to open up a little bit to be aware of them. So this particular group of ancient ones, very intelligent, very conscious, and very willing to be friendly to people who are gentle and kind. They love animals so much. One time when I was going there, they had left me a little note that saying they weren't going to be in where we usually meet. They wouldn't be at that place. And they said they were at Flat Top Mountain. So I'm not so good at vision quests. Or I don't really have a Native American background, although I value it. And so I thought, oh, well, how do I find where that is? You know, where am I going to find it? So I went, to the tourist center, and I asked the people, did you ever hear of this place? And they said, no, you know. So then I got out the computer, and I was trying to find it, and, every state in the United States had a Flat Top Mountain, you know. Right, so finally, yes. I was with a small group, and we got out a dowser, you know, a nice to see if we could find where it was, a crystal on a chain, and just we would drive to an area because there's not that many roads there, and then we would just hold it and say, is this the way to Flat Top Mountain? And it would either go yes or no by the way it was swinging, you know.
Yes.
And little by little, we found our way right up to the top of this Flat Top Mountain using that method, certainly with a little help from the ancient ones. And when we sat in circle there to meet with them, what we found is there was a lot of logging going on, that trees had been cut down. It looked like a war zone. It was so awful because they cut lots of trees down, but they only take the large ones, you know, the logging company. So what the ancient ones there were doing, they were finding any little animals that were trapped beneath the trees or birds' nests that had fallen down, and they were taking them to someplace safe.
They bring
tears to our eyes so many times with their tenderness.
Yes.
So they are absolutely the gentle giants.
They're wonderful stories. Just out of interest, I did have a lady on one of my programs. In fact, I've had her on a couple of times or more, called Elaine Thompson, who lives in England, who was writing a book about her contact with the Sasquatch. Is she known to you?
Yes, she came on one of my trips.
Oh, she did, yes. Right. Well, there you are.
Yeah, she's lovely. My good friend. We do a lot of things together.
Oh,
of course,
right.
She's
a lovely lady, I know. Look, Joan, we're rapidly coming to, believe it or not, the last few minutes of the program.
Oh, no.
I can't believe it. It's time's flying by. Yes, we've been going for the best part of nearly 50 minutes. And I want to give you time just to tell our listeners your two websites, because I think you'd like to put them out. So just go ahead and do that.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Yes, I do have two websites. One is very simply my name. It's www.joanocean.com. And the other one that is on a little different subject than dolphins and whales is the one called www.etfriends.com.
Right.
So those are the two websites, and there you can find information about the Dolphins and Teleportation Symposium that's taking place in Kona, Hawaii, on the Big Island, from June 19th to the 24th, next year, 2011. And
yes.
I hope everyone will come. It's just going to be filled with amazing information and experiences. And, you know, I called it a symposium because I like that idea better. It's not just speakers standing on the stage giving their talk and then leaving. A symposium is a gathering where you have people who are learned in a certain subject and they get up and speak about it. But then after that, the audience participates and we'll be sitting in circle together, asking questions, sharing our own experiences. And that's the idea of a symposium, a more coming together in circle. So I like that, and I will be sharing my experiences of the dolphins taking me through a window in time, as they called it. And that would be a subject for another program.
Right. I mean, have you ever written a book about your experiences?
Yes, I do have two books. that are available. One book is called Dolphin Connection, and then the subtitle is Interdimensional Ways of Living. And the second book is called Dolphins into the Future.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hope people will. I think people enjoy reading them. I was very influenced by Dr. John Lilly initially in my work with the dolphins, and I continue to interact with them and him regularly. He has passed on now.
Right. Are your books available from Amazon?
Yes, they are on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can get them at my website as well. Yeah.
Right. Funny, I must have overlooked those. I didn't see the books listed, but I guess you must have written some. You've got so much to pass on to people. Right. Well, I think that virtually comes to the point where I need to close the program, but not before announcing my guest in the new year. And I think you're coming onto the program is a nice way of finishing up 2010. Perhaps after your symposium, if we're all still here, it would be nice to have you back on the program and hear about that. You know, all your guests and speakers and things. So maybe in the near future, I could contact you again about that.
Yes, that would be wonderful, Mike. I would enjoy that.
Well, thank you very much.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, you're a lovely lady, and your experiences are so nice to hear about. So thank you very much for coming onto the program. You can listen to it again Friday. Which I should explain to my listeners. I'm only saying that because this is being pre-recorded, ready for Friday. Right, friends, subject to confirmation, my first guest in 2011, will be John Davis, whose mission is to unite as many meditation practitioners as possible in a focused meditation to heal the earth. So, there's no more to say about that one. I thank you for being with me through the whole of this year, and I wish you all a very happy new year and hopefully an exciting one. So, thank you very much. God bless you all. Thank you.